Hello and welcome to Glimmer of Genius, episode 18. This is a podcast all about Magic the Gathering, bringing you the latest happenings in the MTG community, from news to tournament reports, deck ideas to MTG finance. We are Glimmer of Genius. If you want to learn more about the show, then check us out on Facebook at Glimmer of Genius with capital G's. Leave a comment or a question for the show and become part of the conversation. It lets us know you like what you hear and is a great way for you to support the show. My name's Luke Vincent and I make YouTube videos. On the line with me is Simon Wright, MTG Trader. We are missing a co-host though. Grant is otherwise engaged. Maybe he will join us a bit later on, but it's just Simon and me today. How are you this evening, Simon?
Where's Grant?
I actually don't know where Grant is.
He's got a social life now. It's not on.
Oh, no. Unacceptable. We can say what we like. He won't listen back to the show. I don't think he ever listens.
No, so. He doesn't. No.
But
we did say we'd slag him off as well.
We'll definitely do that. I'll think of all sorts of horrible things to say. I mean, he likes Unstable. So, I mean, I've lost all respect for him.
You know, I like Unstable. Actually, to be fair, I haven't seen any spoilers for Unstable yet, apart from the Squirrel Link and Crowstorm.
I don't know what to tell you. It's
you're too spiky. You need to enjoy Magic more.
I enjoy...
Embrace the fun.
I enjoy fun in a safe, controlled environment.
Standard environment.
Yes. Absolutely. Okay, so on this episode today, we're going to talk about the triple header of GPs that has been this last weekend. We have Warsaw, Shanghai, and Atlanta. But before we do that, Simon, what have you been up to this week in Magic?
This week in Magic, I have been drafting Ixalong.
Ooh, successfully?
Successfully. Actually, not that successfully. I went 2-1.
That's fine.
I don't draft as much as I used to, so I'm a bit out of practice, but I was in a pod of six, and nothing's to my other poddies, but there was a lot more newer players there, and I seemed to be in the pod with the newer players. So I thought, oh, I could 3-0 this one. I've got it in the bag. Not remembering that the guy directly opposite me in the pod, so 3 away from me, was also quite an experienced drafter.
Ah.
He was in like the optimal position away from me to make sure he picked up all the good cards as well. And I met him in the finals and lost to his red-black aggro pirates.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was a very weird game. A good game one. I thought, yes, got it in the bag. And game two, I think we both mulliganed to 5. And it was a horrible, but he kept a 2-land hand and I kept like a 4-land hand and it went, yeah, so he was just mana screwed and I was just mana flooded the whole day. And it's a very weird matchup.
That's strange. What were you playing?
I was playing green, blue, merfolk. I'd say it's merfolk, but I had no...
Merfolk?
yeah. No, I had good merfolk, but I had no... What's the instant called?
River Herald's Boon.
Yeah. No Herald's Boon. There's only 6 player draft. I didn't see a single one.
Wow.
But I'll tell you what I did have. I had a River Sneak. What's the enchantment called?
One with the Wind?
No.
Ooh, what then? Like, Mark of the Vampire?
Deep Root Waters. Deep Root Waters.
Yeah.
And a Storm Sculptor.
Bouncy fun goodness.
So, my first round opponent, Fainy, I think she's been playing for around 3 or 4 months. And I had River Sneak on board.
Yeah.
Deep Root Waters after that.
Yeah.
So turn 2, turn 3. And turn 4, played Storm Sculptor. The way it went was, of course, I casted Storm Sculptor. So I triggered Deep Root Waters.
Yeah.
So put that on the stack first. So I got the token into play, triggering River Sneak.
Yeah.
+1/+1. Storm Sculptor then entered the battlefield, giving River Sneak again, and I returned the token to my hand, obviously killing it. And of course, she was quite nervous. I was trying to explain this whilst it was on the stack. He just looked at me, going, yep. And it was awesome. It was great.
Why didn't you do the other thing? If you,
what was the other thing?
You had everything there set up for you. If you got that board state. And you cast the unblockable guy, which bounces something, target himself, and then you can return it, and then you cast him again, you get another merfolk, so you get another 2 triggers on your thingy sneak, making all these, you have a merfolk every turn.
Yeah, but my deck was mainly Merfolk. I'd rather not have to spend the I'd rather have a three. She was quite low to the ground and aggressive, and I was just playing, was she white red dinosaurs, I believe?
Yeah.
So she had some big blockers as well. I'd rather have the unblockable guy on the board.
Fair enough.
Than having to play four mana each time just to get an extra 1/1. But yeah, no, I see your point. Yeah. But it also had a Ripjaw Raptor.
Ooh.
And a couple of Pouncers.
Nice.
And a Savage Stomp.
Oh.
So I'll just flick the deck now. And a foiling Snapping. Oh, two Snapping Snailback. So it was mainly Merfolk. Loco was Merfolk with a dinosaur top end curve to finish it off.
Bringing the beats.
It was beautiful. I really liked it. It's one of my favourite decks I've drafted so far. I'll tell you what I have been playing.
Yep.
Elder Scrolls Legends.
What even is that, Simon? Sounds like it's not Magic related.
I'd say it's not, but it's free to play on Steam,
uh-huh.
And it's pretty great. I've got to make sure the wife's not around listening. Basically, I've sunk in around 10 hours in a week,
okay.
Which is quite a lot for me for an online game. A lot, any game, actually, at the moment, just to sneak in, to manage to play that.
Yeah.
The gameplay is not... It's not Magic. It is good, but it's not Magic. But what I'm hoping for is the extra bits that come on. Like, you've got a story mode, you can complete levels, you get, like, gold and new cards. When you level up, you can evolve cards. And I'm playing it thinking, yeah, this is okay, this is fun. But now I'm thinking, if Magic Arena is actually wanting to compete in this sort of world, this sort of Elder Scrolls Legends, Hearthstone, that sort of realm now, what they might do when it comes to play.
But yeah.
With Magic as the game, instead of some knockoff. So it's got me quite excited thinking about that, actually.
So it's just making you more hungry for a Magic Arena?
Yes, yeah. Very much so. The game's quite fun, but the biggest thing is your creatures can't block.
Okay.
I mean, so some ways it's a bit limited interaction sometimes, but there's other stuff that's going on. I won't go into it. I was hoping Grant would be on the line and he might have played and gone, yes, I know what this is. But the stuff that goes around it, like just how the more you play, like you get a login bonus, you log in, you get gold, you get crystals, blah, blah, blah. You use them to buy extra cards or morph cards. And if that can be fitted to a Magic theme.
I'm sure they'll have some sort of in-game currency of some kind. Hopefully it's not just actual currency. I live in hope. I really do. I'd like to think that they would have learnt from the complete train wreck that is Magic Online. And it will be something much more positive.
It won't be Magic Online. It won't be a competitive. It won't be what some of us are hoping for. It's going to be a casual.
And maybe.
I think I like the casual thing. If they can do what Elder Scrolls Legends did and what I heard Hearthstone's doing as well, and like you win tickets to play online drafts for free and stuff like that.
Yes.
Awesome. Awesome. Yes. That's what I want from Magic.
Yeah, 100%.
For my online Magic, not my competitive face-to-face spitting your opponent.
Absolutely. I think that's what everyone wants, really. Because, I mean, you know, sometimes when you just want to play for fun, even if you are a tournament grinder or whatever, you do just want to play Magic because you enjoy it. And Magic Online is really not built for that.
No, that's the thing. I found myself with a free evening. I was like, I could sit down, do a draft or a sealed event, and it could be a league, so I don't have to commit the whole time to it. I could just play a little bit. But I was like, I'll just fight Elder Scrolls and play for like half an hour or an hour and call it quits whenever I want. So I was playing against the AI, but I was having a whirl of the time.
Yeah.
But because it's a game I'm not familiar with, I mean, there's the whole deck building behind it as well, but I'm just like, I don't have time to learn all the cards. All the meta decks, whatever. I'm just not gonna bother. I'm just gonna play the storyline with the decks that are pre-built and the cards are unlocked with the pre-built deck at the moment. But if it's Magic, I'll be like, I know these cards, I know the game, I know what I'm doing. I've got the time, so I'm whispering a little bit in case the wife ends up going, "You've been doing what?"
I'm pretty sure they are learning from these other things that exist. You know, Magic Online is symptomatic of its time when it was first out. The way people play games online has vastly changed to when Magic Online first existed. Yeah, they simply need to compete. Otherwise, it's just going to fall apart and just be nothing.
Definitely.
But what I've seen of it is really positive.
Yeah, I hope so. So, what have you been doing in Magic?
I was helping one of my teammates prepare for an RPCQ. So I did some modern testing this last week. So I proxied up Counter's Company in modern, which is the deck that basically plays Mana Dorks and the Vizier of Remedies, and Walking Ballista combo and Devoted Druid. So basically, Devoted Druid lets you make mana, and then you can untap it and put a -1/-1 counter on it, and it will let you then make another mana. And Vizier of Remedies means you, when it's in play, you put one less -1/-1 counter on something if it wouldn't take a -1/-1 counter on it. So effectively, you can tap and untap Devoted Druid for as much mana as you see fit, and that then goes hand in hand with Walking Ballista to put unlimited counters on it, and then you shoot your opponent. So you just win on the spot. So that's the deck, and it's really cool actually playing that in Modern. It wasn't like took it to an FNM and, you know, we had a match loss record, but actually we, you know, played against Eldrazi Tron with it. And one of the things we sort of learnt from that matchup is game one felt really favoured in Collected Company, because there wasn't that many ways Eldrazi Tron had to interact with the combo. I beat Philippe one game through a Dismember and a turn 3 Thought Not Seer. I still just won. Because it just, you know, I just drew another creature, another combo piece that he killed, and then by the time he cast Thought Not Seer, it didn't matter. I just had enough redundancy in my hand from between Collected Company and Court of Calling. Nice. It was just like, so it's pretty horrible. But then after game two, he boards in a lot more removal. Things like Grafdigger's Cage, which shuts down Coco and Court of Calling. So it felt a lot more favoured. So you need things like Reclamation Sage or Chrysalia Primage out of the sideboard. So that was interesting to play that matchup.
So how the, I think we had three local players attend that RPG Curing Edinburgh in the end, didn't we?
We did.
How did they get on?
I think they all bombed out. I think it was really, really tragic. I know I could be doing them a disservice, but from what little I heard, chatter.
Edinburgh is a long way to travel for us.
Yeah.
Probably the furthest.
Yeah,
we couldn't be further away, really.
No, I did feel for them.
It'd still be in the UK anyway.
Yeah. So, no, yeah, a bit of a shame, but there we go. And then outside of that, just been testing for Standard for the PPTQ this weekend. So that's fine. Not sure what I'm going to play yet. Probably will just be Teemer if I can't get this other deck that I'm working on to be.
That's this Sunday at Dice Beam, listeners. In case we get it out before Sunday, I doubt we will. But
I'm going to try.
Just in case.
I will try my darndest. Okay, so that was me. So what we're going to move on to next is some GP info. Now, there was 3 Grand Prix this last weekend gone. There was Warsaw, Atlanta, and Shanghai. So we have 3 lots of deck lists. 3 lots of top 8s to kind of go over. So with that in mind, we're not going to probably go over them in as much depth as we might normally like to, especially as a lot of the decks will be Teemer and like energy-based decks, which are nothing really new. So
and especially since you sent me 5 minutes before we started.
Yep.
Well,
as always.
Here's some lists. What's going on?
Yeah. So let's start with Warsaw. Okay, so in Warsaw, there were 5 energy decks in the top 8. One of them was Sultai, one of them was straight Teemer, and the other 3 were 4-colour Teemer, or Teemer Black. And then the other decks were, there's 1 Mardu Vehicles, 1 Green-Blue Pummeler, and 1 God Pharaoh's Gift. So the energy decks, there isn't really an awful lot to say. Sultai is a little bit more aggressive, a bit lower to the ground, using Blossoming Defense to great effect. I don't know if you saw any of the Pro Tour coverage, Simon, but
I saw a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, Blossoming Defense did some real work, and it can just do a number on you if you're, you know, not really expecting it. So rather than playing some of the more expensive cards, you know, just being able to play something like Long Tusk Club on turn 3 and leaving up Blossoming Defense can just be enough to wreck people.
Yeah, I always pick them up from bulk.
You can really kind of get a slight edge on people if you're building a deck and you've got like even just like a couple of copies in it. You can make people play around it. If you get someone with it in game one, then you just know for the rest of the game it's going to be in their mind. Oh, Blossoming Defense, has they got Blossoming Defense? So yeah, great fun.
Are you I'm getting a bit annoyed about, I don't know about you, but about decks being called energy decks.
See, I was just being lazy. What was it annoys you?
Because energy is such a it's a brand new resource. So we know, even as soon as it was, not beforehand, but once it reached Standard, that we knew it was going to be a big thing. It's basically a resource. It can do extra stuff.
Yeah.
Basically, any deck in Standard probably should be utilising energy. wherever possible.
Yeah.
It's just an ether hub. Just to call decks. I know why, because they generate, they're focused on generating energy to do extra things. But basically every deck in standard should be utilising energy because it's an extra resource to be abused.
Well,
so just say, oh, this is a three-colour energy deck, this is a soul stone deck, this is a four-colour energy deck. It's a bit like, I know what they're doing. They're just trying to summarise the deck in a certain category. But if you're playing standard, you should be abusing the energy resource.
There are plenty of decks that don't, though. For example,
there are.
Approach of the Second Sun deck doesn't use energy, and the Tokens deck don't use energy. Ramunap Red doesn't use energy. And
do they not have energy in them at all? I know Godfrey's Gift has some energy.
Godfrey's Gift has a small amount of energy for one card, Minister of Inquiries. And
they used a great effect, that energy.
Yes.
To pull off its game plan.
Yes, 100%. So that,
I think even Mardy Vehicles uses energy for Ethersphere Harvester.
Yes.
I know I'm going on a bit on a limb. What I'm trying to say is, just calling a deck an energy deck, I don't think is efficient.
No.
That's probably the thing is, it is efficient. It's not descriptive about, I don't know, one.
I totally get what you're saying, because, like, you could say, well, that they all use energy, therefore they could all be called energy decks. Just to call a deck an energy deck is really misleading, because it was funny. The other day, so I heard someone describe Teemer as mid-range, and I was sitting there thinking, actually don't hear people call it the mid-range deck, and it is like the perfect example of a mid-range deck, which has got these awesome creatures, but the ability to kind of change direction and be aggressive or be slow and controlling depending on the matchup. Really good cards, dirtly cards like Attune with Aether. It is definitely a mid-range deck, but you really rarely hear it called that. And it's funny.
So you there go, it's Teemer Energy, get it right.
Yeah. Well, actually, I think this is the reason why. I think, first of all, the naming conventions, it is just that. It's a naming convention. Because if you think about Affinity and Mullen, there are no cards in Affinity that actually work and have the Affinity mechanic except Thoughtcast. But why is it called Affinity? So it's a naming convention. So like it's just a hangover from when it was actually using the Affinity mechanic.
Yeah, fair enough.
So not all deck names make sense. I mean, that's just the way that is. And also, I've noticed this as well with mid-range decks. This is what got me thinking about it quite a bit, was mid-range decks don't tend to be called X mid-range or XY mid-range. If you think, okay, you have mono red aggro or you have blue white control, but very rarely do you hear Jund mid-range or Teemer mid-range. Like, it's just very, it's not a very exciting, it doesn't roll off the tongue, I guess. It doesn't sound as good. So I think it's partly down to that. So it's all those little things, like, you know, it really abuses energy, and mid-range doesn't tend to be used as a naming convention. So I think it's just kind of caught on. But I get what you're saying.
I think one GP, you're going to have a top eight and it's all energy. All totally different. Well, they're not going to be totally different. But, you know, Solto energy, four colour energy, Teemer energy. It's just going to be energy at the end of everyone.
Yeah. Because you could argue on
it's
your...
It's like before energy, calling decks three-colour mana decks because they use land.
That's a good point.
Stretch a little bit, yeah.
But now if we follow your logic, this top eight had all energy decks in it because, you know, they all utilise it in some form or another.
Yeah, we call them all energy decks.
Yeah. So energy everywhere in this top eight. The most interesting one for me is the Blue Green Pummeler. It's not a new deck, but it's hilarious in as much.
That's what I want to start at.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to talk about the Teemer decks. The Sultai deck, it's very much based around the top eight, the deck that won the Pro Tour, Ixalan. And then God Pharaoh's Gift, again, very, very modeled around, I think it was Pascal Maynard's blue white God Pharaoh's Gift deck. It has that
That's made a top eight, because I was listening to one of our podcasts, a couple of weeks old now, where Godfrey's Gift won. What did it win? It won a GP.
Yeah.
And you said, oh, it's just a flash in the pan. Everybody's prepared for it now. Won't be good again. And it was at the Pro Tour, top eight this GP.
Yeah, it's
so
done
I just
it.
Got to bring that up. Just thought I'd bring that up, Luke.
Yeah, I was wrong. it's frustratingly strong. And I think it's got quite a reasonable game against mono red, just with the lifelink and the stupid angel of invention lifelinking stuff. So it can cause that deck fits, which is why Rampaging Ferocidon is such an important part of those decks now, because it just needs a way to not be losing to a random lifelinkers. Mm. But yeah, no, absolutely, God Pharaoh's Gift is very powerful. But yeah, this green blue Pummeler deck, I played against it online. Cartouche of Knowledge or One with the Wind on a Bristling Hydra is not fun.
That does look good.
So I was like, okay, this is Pummeler. I'm expecting, you know, Larger Than Life, Blossoming Defense, that sort of stuff. And then when he cast One with the Wind on a Hydra, I was like, right, okay, fine. That's how this game is. So I didn't realize I was playing Ixalan Unlimited.
Surely that should be called Green Blue Pummeler Energy deck.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. It's funny. It's a funny deck.
I like the one with the wind.
It is great.
It looks awesome. Looks great fun.
It is pretty sweet. I appreciate Dive Down as well. Two Dive Downs. So
a bit hexproof. Larger than life seems, I guess it's just to give it the extra. I'll prefer for Pummeler, obviously. Yeah.
Have you ever been hit by a 2020 Pummeler?
I don't play enough standard to be hit by 2020. Oh, no, I have. When the deck first emerged, I was hit by 2020 Pummeler.
Basically, you untap with Pummeler and you cast Larger Than Life and boom, you know, any amount of energy. I think the worst I've been hit with was a 40-41.
Good.
Yeah.
Does it have flying with One with the Wind as well?
No.
I like this deck. I'm just annoyed it's not called an energy deck.
It doesn't use enough energy. That's the problem.
It's got loads of energy.
Nope, not enough.
We're going to have to call up who names these decks, what the rules are, and when you categorise an energy deck or not, apparently.
Yeah.
So I'll stop going on that now.
So yeah, that was GP Warsaw. So there's some old and new in there. Well, actually, I don't even know if there was any new in there. But
Mardu Vehicles energy deck? No, I'll stop.
Yeah. It's nice to see Mardu Vehicles is back.
I got beat by it at a standard showdown the other week. Quite efficiently.
Mm.
Is that what you're building now?
Mardu Vehicles? No, not quite. I'm trying out Red-Black Vehicles.
Red-Black Vehicles?
Yeah. So essentially, I was trying out Ramanat Red. Obviously, it's very beatable. If you want to beat it, you can beat it. So I've tried black to essentially it's around that red deck, but with artifact theme to kind of plug some of the little weaknesses in it. So having the vehicles, so you
play unlicensed disintegration, isn't it?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons.
You're a jock. Every time.
Yeah, but the cards gas, and also part of the problem is some of the more difficult things you can go against Teema is if someone goes turn one attune the ether, turn two long tusk cub, and they're able to get the long tusk cub out of shock range and then very quickly out of lightning strike range. So playing black to then have access to use cut to ribbons at its most to its full potential. And also to have access to unlicensed disintegration so that I can kill stuff with toughness more than 4. That's the main reason, really. So it means I have less reliance on the burn, because the burn's built into the removal, which is nice. Yeah, that's it, really. The rest of the deck more or less staying the same, and just playing a couple of vehicles, which I'm hoping will be just as fine against control, because they'll be wrath-proof, the vehicles, which is nice. But it does make Abrades better against me, so it's just an idea. It might not work, and I might just end up playing Teema, but we'll see. I've had a bit of success with it at the moment. I'm halfway through a league, and I'm 3-0 with it at the moment, so
pretty good.
Yeah, so we'll see. Funnily enough, unlicensed disintegration has been particularly good, and has Cut to Ribbons, actually. Cut to Ribbons basically got me through a board stall, sitting there like, well, I've got no way I can win this game, but I could just burn them out with Cut to Ribbons, which is great.
I play Cut to Ribbons in my Green Red Dinosaur deck.
Yeah.
It does have a way to use ribbons, but rarely. Cut's good enough.
Cut's, yeah, I think Cut's fine. You know, Mizzium Mortars is fine. So, looking at the Warsaw top 8, and then look, you know, you could be thinking, actually, Ramanat Red's dead. You know, Ramanat Red is not a thing you need to be worried about anymore. It's obviously not going to make top 8 of a GP. But then, if you look at GP Shanghai, you have not one, not two, not three, but four copies of Ramanut Red in that top eight.
Which their meta games are a lot different to...
Yeah, they like Mono Red. Mm. And then you have one, two, three team of mid-range decks, one of them being a four-colour mid-range deck. The differences in cards between these lists across GPs, let alone the, you know, the different ones in each individual top eight, is not an awful lot. But we'll post the links to the deck list below. There's a couple of different things in some of them, like you might have a Vizier of Many Faces in one, an extra Chandra here. One guy's playing the Gate main deck, which is interesting. One Supreme Will, which was in the Pro Tour. So that's being seen more. Again, similar line to the one of Blossoming Defense. You know, you slam down a Scarab God and then someone goes Supreme Will and you're like, oh, what just happened there? And then you're going to be constantly worried about that from the next game, which is funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, the cool bit of spice, I guess, in this top eight was the Grixis tokens from Akada Nawa.
Grixis Foster tokens, yeah, just looking at that.
Yeah, now this is sweet. So,
no demon though. I was hoping for a demon.
They do have the Inventor's Goggles, which is the one mana artifact which you can equip to artificers for free when they come in. Gives them plus one, plus two. Aethersphere Harvester, Sky Sovereign, but then they're playing a one of Scarab God. Then they're playing Maverick Thopterist, which, if you're not familiar with that, is the 5-mana 2-2, which makes 2/1/1s, but it's got improvise.
2/1/1 Thopters, though.
2/1/1 yeah. Thopters, so they fly about. And then Aether Sweeper, 2-mana 1-2, when it enters the battlefield, get 2 energy. When it attacks, spend 2 energy, you make Thopters. PNLR, which makes Thopters. World of Virtuoso, which makes Thopters. So I'm seeing a little bit of a theme here. But it's a good theme because evasive tokens are pretty good. If you can gum up the board, use their Harness Lightnings, Magma Sprays, Metallic Rebukes to deal with the tricky permanents and then just get in over the top with some tokens, this seems pretty cool. Playing Reverse Engineer, which a card I do like as well, so the 5-mana draw spell with Improvise. But the craziest thing here, which is what I think it's really trying to do, is abuse Decoction Module. Decoction Module. That's a funny word to say. It's a 2-mana artifact. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, you get an energy. And then you can pay 4 to return target creature you control to its owner's hand. So what this does, if you have World of Virtuoso out with this, then you can effectively make Thopters for cheap, which is good. And then whenever... So you make a Thopter for 3 energy, and then it enters, and then Decoction Module then gives you an energy. So then you can put that towards making more.
Yeah.
I played against a Magical Christmas Land deck, is the only way I'm going to describe it, which had Decoction Module and then the other modules that they made out with Kaladesh, the ones that whenever you make energy, you put plus one counters on something or whatever. He got multiples of these out on a World of Virtuoso. He basically then immediately was able to make something like 6 or 7 different tokens. They all got plus one. World of Virtuoso was like an 8-9, and he had like four or five Thopter tokens. So like if you get multiples of those out, or you know, it can do some stupid things. But this one seems a bit more sensible than that. Definitely interesting. Obviously, Scarab
Blood's
pretty good.
I like the deck. I think it's quite good.
Yeah.
Nice to see something a bit different.
Yeah, definitely. I do like seeing the deck lists from these GPs, because, or even nationals, because they do seem to be much more creative than what you see as the norm in like the American tournaments.
Yes. Yeah, we're quite... seem to be quite orientated, Europe seems to be quite orientated the same as American tournaments from what I've gathered. I mean, I'm not a big examiner of GP Pro Tour top 8s really. I browse them, but from what I see, the ones from the East are a lot more unique, and we seem to follow the American for metagame purposes.
Definitely, definitely. It's a lot of the tournament stuff I look at is these big places in America. It's the easiest thing to, I think it's the easiest thing to do. After a while, you kind of get used to it. But it's still, I think it's still good to look elsewhere, though. You definitely see more interesting things.
But I think that the one we just looked at, especially the Thopter deck, is aiming to exploit their own metagame. So it's something totally different. It's something you'd never see in the US top eight.
Yeah.
We just saw Blue-Green Pummeler was to exploit the US meta, or the EU meta, more like. Same with this deck here.
Yeah.
It's always very interesting.
Absolutely. Okay, so the final GP that occurred over last weekend was in Atlanta. And
busy weekend.
Yeah, very busy weekend. So back to America for an interesting take. So, funnily enough, actually, there's a couple of lists here which are equally interesting. So you had your normal mix. I think there was four Teemer mid-range style decks. You have four, one of which playing Nicol Bolas, which is nice. Ooh. Nice to see Bolas back in a Teemer deck. So instead of playing two Vraskas, just put Nicol Bolas in there. I mean, card's pretty strong. But that's the most spice. That is the most spice, I think, from all the Teemer lists. And then we had one Mardu vehicles, two Ramanut Reds, and one Esper Approach to the Second Suns. So Mardu vehicles is pretty stock. Main deck Chandras. Only one Hazoret, which is interesting. And speaking of only one Hazoret, if you look at Ben Stark's red list, Desert Red they've called it.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
This is odd to me. I do not understand this, but it's very, very strange numbers on this. So a lot of red decks will play three Kari Zev Skyships, so it's only playing two for a start. It's got three main deck Glorybringers, only one Hazoret, and three Sand Strangler, which is the Flame Tongue Kavu-like creature. So four mana, 3/3 beast. When it enters the battlefield, if you've got a desert in the bin or you control a desert, it does three damage to target creature. It's an awesome card, really good card, but it just hasn't been seen in play. It's only really in the sideboard around the Pro Tour Hour of Devastation. Largely only really used against red. So it's interesting to see it here.
In the main board as well.
In the main board, yeah. And you'd think, do I want to play Hazoret? Do I want to play Sand Strangler at four? What am I? So it's crazy. And 25 lands in the main as well. A lot of the time you see them sideboarding into the 25th land. But he's just going, nope, we're going to do this. Also, he's really throwing caution to the wind with the mana base. You see the four Ramanut Ruins, some Scorched Desert, only three of. But that's because he's running two Scavenger Grounds main and three Genes of the Dead, which is the when it is put into the graveyard from the battlefield, create a 2/2 black zombie creature token.
So like it's it.
Awesome with Ramanut Ruins. You go, right, I'll sacrifice Gene of the Dead, ping you for two, and you get a zombie.
Yeah.
Which, as we said before, when we were going through the set review, comes in untapped, which is great. So that's really interesting. In the testing I've had, I found just running the extra copies of Scavenger Grounds. So running four Scorched Deserts and, you know, one or two Scavenger Grounds, I was like, oh, sometimes, you know, between drawing too many Ramanut Ruins and colourless lands, you don't always get the red you need. So I find it interesting. He's just really going all out. He's got effectively eight colourless lands that he could just draw all of those and not actually cast any red spells. So it's really brave mana base there.
What's the treasure maps for?
I was just about to get to that. I do not know. I mean, I'm not going to question Ben Stark. You know, he's obviously going to have. What is this? Yeah, I do not know. I mean, one of the problems with the red deck is a complete lack of library manipulation. But one of the other problems with red decks is they tend to be very mana hungry, and you want to be using your mana as much as possible. So are you having to leave one mana up to activate this could be a problem. But then also maybe it's a good thing because you're able to use the mana. It's a mana sink in a sense because you're tapping your mana and you haven't and scrying if you haven't got a play or you know you've got a three drop on turn four so you can then use your map. I don't know.
It seems like an odd addition.
I've seen it in the sideboard versus control as a great way to kind of get value. But
I can understand that. But in the main, you'd think you'd want some sort of burn spell. I guess he's running most of the burn spells. But
four lightning strike, three abrade, two shock, two spray. I mean, that's
you
fairly stock.
Two more spray, really. No, not some more spray. Two more shocks, really.
That number of burn spells tends to be around about the number that people run with. Okay. Whereas the only difference being instead of two magma spray, it's four shock, and then maybe sprays in the board.
I guess it helps you ramp into enough mana because it creates the three treasure tokens, ramps up to enough mana to activate your Ramunat Ruins more often and still play threats, maybe. I don't know. We'll have to find out.
Yeah. This deck seems like it's tuned to go a bit bigger than the traditional Ramunat Red decks with the 25 lands, three main deck Chandras, three main deck Glorybringers. And a lot of the times, red will board into Chandra and Glorybringer to beat Teemer. So my assumption is this could be a, an extra little bit of tech to gain advantage over Teemer, perhaps.
Having the Mage instead, yeah. We can gain one more often,
yeah. Yeah, and maybe the treasure maps that as well, to try and just kind of grind a little bit of a card advantage, not necessarily card advantage, but card selection in a very tight matchup, because often it's quite anecdotal, the Teemer versus red matchup is whoever wins the dice roll. So you need to be playing relevant cards, so this helps you to draw relevant threats.
Yeah, I guess it's just a late turn play. Okay.
That's my guess. 3-round paging for Ossidon helps as well against the Whirler Virtuoso, which is a massive problem normally if you got lots of one drops. But definitely, definitely an interesting take on it. And maybe this is the way to beat Teemer. And maybe that was the aim of the game. And, you know, he made the top eight, so clearly he would have had to play Teemer at some point. You know.
You would have thought so, yeah.
Yeah, he's not going to dodge it all 15 rounds. And then lastly, very quickly, we have an Approach to the Second Sun deck, and I've been wanting to try an Esper list for a long time, so I'm really pleased to see it actually worked, because one thing I felt is just straight up blue-white, the removal is beyond Fumigate and Settle the Wreckage and Cast Out, the removal is not that great, especially at the lower end of the curve, so this guy has done exactly the right thing, I think, and just effectively gone for Splashing Black to give him Fatal Push.
Just for Fatal Push.
Which is totally worth it. And Vraska's Contempt. Yeah, probably, yeah. Vraska's Contempt in the sideboard. Because the problem is, someone plays a Bomat Courier against Blue-White Approach, and then you lose. Which and honestly, it is really sad. Because what you then do is, your options are Slash of Talons, which is terrible, and only really needed in the sideboard. Or Aether Meltdown. And they're still hitting you with that Bomat Courier. They're still getting the cards under it. All of a sudden, they then sacrifice it at some random point in the game. Yeah. And they've drawn eight cards. And you're like, oh, okay.
I love Bomat Courier. Someone let me run that red for a couple of weeks for some standard showdowns like last season. Fell in love with Bomat Courier.
He's great, isn't he? He's great.
Yeah.
It's so funny as well, because it's easy to see the people that have been wrecked by it. Because it's just so funny when someone like Harness Lightnings it like almost immediately, or just like wastes a decent removal spell on it, and you're like, that was just a 1-1. That's great. And then you untap and play Hazoret, and they can't Vraska's because they've already used it on a Bomat Courier. But no, this deck's really good. I'm loving the 4 Regal Caracal in the sideboard, just to really hate on red. Scarab of Gods in the sideboard as well. It's always nice to board into that, and Torrential Gearhulks to like have more creatures when people tend to board out their removal. But yeah, it's a really solid deck. I think it won, actually, this one. I believe it won that one. Really good. And Search for Azkanta, proving to be a good card. So that's one. That's one I did get right, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that is all for now from us. If you like what you hear, then check us out at glimmeroftgenius.podbean.com, where you can find all of our episodes to download. Or find us on Facebook at Glimmer of Genius. Also, if you're interested in even more Magic the Gathering content, then you can check out my YouTube channel, Vincent Games, where I post weekly updates from my vlog to MTG gameplay, so do check that out if you're interested in even more content. But in the meantime, thanks very much for listening, and stay tuned for more.
I'll see you tomorrow.
That's all right, buddy. Take care. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Take care. Bye.
Thanks. It's a 2-mana artifact. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, you get an energy. And then you can pay 4 to return target creature you control to its owner's hand. So the
we
more...
We should be calling it Grixis Fructus Energy Deck.
Yeah.
Just jumps on it. You can edit that bit out.